Hey everyone, welcome to our deep dive, on the Patriot movement. We're going to be kind of unpacking this whole thing. It's all about, revitalizing American liberty through, like constitutionally sound governance. It's a complex landscape, I guess you could say, with a bunch of different groups, all focusing on different aspects of what they see as, essential for American freedom.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that these groups, aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. You'll find people who identify with multiple subgroups within this whole Patriot movement thing, which I think really reflects how interconnected their concerns are.
Yeah, for sure. So, let's start with a group that kind of really caught my attention when I was going through all this, which is the tax honesty movement. They're making some pretty bold claims about how, most Americans completely misunderstand tax law. They even use terms like, an inaccurate socialized view of it. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it is. And to kind of get a handle on what they're talking about, we need to look at this guy, Dave Champion. He's kind of a prominent voice in the movement, and he argues that there's this huge disconnect between what the tax law actually says and how it's actually being implemented.
Yeah, and he doesn't really hold back. He claims that there's no legal requirement for private sector payroll withholding, and that private companies don't even actually need employer identification numbers. Like, those are pretty serious
Oh,
accusations.
absolutely. And it goes even further than that. He actually states that there is no law requiring you to provide a social security number for any private sector financial transactions that occur within the US. And he lays out these seven key points that he believes demonstrate this, this widespread misunderstanding of the entire tax code.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of mind-blowing to me that these claims aren't getting more attention. You would think that this would be like all over the news if it were true, right?
And Champion actually addresses that in some of the stuff that we were looking at. He claims that there's this deliberate media blackout on the whole issue. Like the media are too afraid to cover it favorably, for fear of retaliation from the IRS.
Wow, that's a pretty heavy accusation to make.
It is. And he also mentions that the IRS has refused to openly debate these points.
Really?
Yeah, there was this situation he describes where there was a congressional hearing that was planned to address a lot of the questions that the tax honesty movement had brought up. And both the IRS and the Department of Justice initially agreed to participate, but then they backed out after they saw the list of questions that were going to be asked. Champion suggests that they knew they couldn't actually defend their position.
So it sounds like this group is facing some pretty major pushback. It makes you wonder, what would actually happen if their interpretation of the tax code was widely accepted? Could it really like shake up the system that much?
That's a really great question, and it gets to the heart of why this whole tax honesty movement is so intriguing. They're challenging one of the most fundamental pillars of, how our government operates. If their claims were ever like proven to be valid, it would have massive implications for, things like tax revenue and how government programs are actually funded.
It would certainly spark a huge debate about the role of government, and the power of government and, an individual liberty.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. Okay, so moving on, let's talk about the Social Security opponents. Now, I'm kind of curious, is opponent even the right word here?
That's a good point. Going through all this stuff, it suggests that they're not necessarily against the concept of Social Security itself. They seem more concerned about transparency and what they see as the quote unquote voluntary nature of the system.
Okay, so are they saying that participating in Social Security is actually optional?
Exactly. They argue that it's voluntary for citizens of the states and that FICA withholding isn't actually mandatory. And they point to, their own legal research to back up these claims. They're actively working to educate people about this perspective.
That's certainly a different take on Social Security than what most people are probably familiar with.
It is.
And then there's this group that is focused on Social Security and what they call non-enumeration. It seems like their main concern revolves around privacy.
Yeah, they fundamentally object to the idea of population enumeration, whether it's mandatory, like, a national ID card or a consequence of participating in Social Security. And the reasons for this are twofold. They have like practical and political concerns about, the potential misuse of this information, but they also cite religious objections to enumeration, which I found interesting.
Yeah, I can see how that ties into these broader anxieties about government overreach. And the potential for the erosion of privacy in, our digital age. This whole idea that the government shouldn't have access to, certain types of personal information, that's definitely resonating with, a lot of people these days.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting how all these different threads of like concern about government power seem to weave through so many of these different groups we've been talking about. It's almost like a tapestry of anxieties about individual liberty being encroached upon.
Yeah, you can definitely see that connection for sure. So speaking of anxieties about government power, let's move on to the judicial reformers.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people out there can probably relate to, feeling skeptical about the justice system sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This group's frustration really boils down to a perception that American courts often fail to deliver true justice. They see rulings as, frequently favoring those with power and influence, leaving, everyday citizens feeling unheard and powerless.
So what exactly are they pushing for in terms of reform? What do they want to see change?
Well, their core belief is that judges should be held accountable for what they consider to be incorrect and unlawful decisions. They want more transparency and accountability within the judicial system. They even point to websites like jailforjudges.org as examples of their activism.
Ooh, jailforjudges.org. That's pretty intense. I mean, I get the frustration with the system, but that sounds kind of radical.
It definitely highlights the level of anger and distrust that some people feel towards the judicial system. They believe that it's become too insulated, from the consequences of its actions.
I guess it makes you wonder, what kind of impact can these groups really have? Are they just voicing their discontent, or can they actually bring about, meaningful change?
That's a great question. And it's definitely worth considering. I mean, change rarely happens overnight, but these groups are out there actively working to try to shift the conversation and raise awareness about their concerns. They're organizing, they're advocating, and they're trying to influence public opinion. So whether they achieve their ultimate goals, that remains to be seen. But their presence in the political landscape definitely reflects, a growing sentiment of, dissatisfaction with the status quo.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, shifting gears a little bit. Let's talk about the states' rights advocates. This one seems, particularly relevant to a lot of the current political debates, that are happening right now about federal overreach.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This group is deeply concerned about what they see as the federal government, exceeding its constitutional limits and encroaching on powers that are actually reserved for the individual states. They see the 10th Amendment, which outlines those reserved powers as being, steadily eroded.
So it's interesting how this ties back to that theme of distrust in centralized authority that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're basically saying, let the states handle their own affairs and keep the federal government out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They believe that, a more decentralized system with a greater emphasis on state sovereignty would actually lead to greater individual liberty and a more responsive government. They argue that, decisions should be made as close to the people as possible and that states are often better equipped to address, the specific needs and concerns of their citizens.
Yeah, it's a perspective that definitely resonates with, I think, a pretty significant segment of the population, particularly in certain regions of the country, where there's this strong tradition of independence and self-reliance.
And speaking of challenging centralized authority, let's delve into the Federal Reserve opponents. Okay, so this group has some pretty strong opinions about the Federal Reserve. They fundamentally believe that, delegating national monetary policy to a central bank, especially one that they perceive as being controlled by private interests, is both unconstitutional and really detrimental to the nation's economic well-being.
So they're essentially saying that the Fed has too much power and that it's not acting in the best interests of the American people.
That's the crux of their argument.
Right.
They often point to things like the removal of the gold standard and the subsequent devaluation of the U.S. dollar as, evidence of the Fed's harmful influence. They believe that this system has led to, things like economic instability, inflation, and a loss of control over the nation's financial destiny.
It's interesting how they connect this back to, the idea of individual liberty. They see the Fed's actions as eroding the value of people's savings and diminishing their economic freedom.
Yeah, exactly. They believe that a sound monetary policy should be based on principles of fiscal responsibility and limited government intervention with, greater emphasis on individual choice and free market principles.
Okay, so we've got a group questioning the tax system.
Yeah.
We've got another group challenging the legitimacy of Social Security. Now we've got folks who want to dismantle the Federal Reserve. It seems like there's a pattern emerging here.
You're picking up on a key theme here that runs throughout the entire Patriot movement. This deep skepticism of centralized power and a strong belief in individual autonomy are recurring themes. They view these institutions as having become, too large, too powerful, and too disconnected from the needs of, everyday citizens.
It's a perspective that I think is worth understanding, even if you don't necessarily agree with all of their conclusions. it forces you to really examine these institutions with a critical eye and to consider the potential consequences of, you know, concentrated power.
Absolutely. These groups are raising important questions, you know, about accountability, transparency, and the balance of power in our society. Whether or not you share their views, you know, engaging with their arguments can actually lead to a more informed and nuanced understanding of these complex issues.
For sure. Now let's talk about a topic that's always a hot button issue, gun rights. The right to keep and bear arms advocates are another very vocal faction within the Patriot movement.
Yeah, this group is fiercely dedicated to protecting gun rights. They view the Second Amendment as, you know, a cornerstone of American liberty and a vital safeguard against tyranny.
It seems like they see gun ownership as more than just, you know, a hobby or a right. It's almost like a fundamental duty for responsible citizens.
You're right. They often argue that an armed citizenry is essential to maintaining a balance of power and ensuring that the people have the means to defend themselves not only against criminals, but also against a potentially, you know, overreaching government.
Yeah, they're not shy about invoking some pretty powerful historical figures to support their arguments.
Oh, absolutely. They frequently quote Thomas Jefferson, you know, who famously said, "The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is as a last resort to protect themselves against tyranny in government." And they also love to cite George Washington, who said, "Firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the American people's liberty teeth and keystone under independence."
Those are some pretty impactful quotes, and they definitely resonate with this group's core belief in the importance of individual liberty and self-reliance.
Yeah, you can definitely see how these historical figures and their words hold a lot of weight for them. Hmm. It's not just about, you know, the practical aspects of gun ownership, but about a deeper philosophical commitment to, you know, these principles of freedom and self-determination.
Okay, so I've got groups concerned about taxes, Social Security,
yeah,
Federal Reserve gun control. It's like a checklist of, you know, hot button political issues. What's next?
Well, next up, we have a group that's really concerned about the scope of federal power, the federal expansion opponents, which, as you might guess, there's some overlap here with the states' rights advocates.
Yeah, I can see the connection there. It's all about pushing back against what they perceive as the federal government overstepping its boundaries and, you know, encroaching on areas that should really be left to the states.
Precisely. This group is particularly wary of how mechanisms like the Interstate Commerce Clause have been used to justify, you know, the expansion of federal authority into areas that they believe were originally intended to be under state control.
So can you give us some, like, concrete examples of what they see as federal overreach?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of things are they pushing back against?
They often point to, you know, regulations and laws that they believe infringe on individual liberties and erode the sovereignty of states. So, for example, they might argue against federal mandates related to things like healthcare education or environmental regulations, believing that, you know, these issues should be handled at the state level. They see this as a gradual but steady creep, you know, towards centralization of power and a departure from the Founding Fathers' vision of a limited federal government.
It sounds like they're really trying to draw a line in the sand and say, like, this far and no further.
Yeah.
You know, they want to protect what they see as the rightful balance of power between the states and the federal government.
Exactly. They believe that a stronger emphasis on state sovereignty would actually lead to greater individual freedom and, you know, a more responsive and accountable government.
Okay, let's shift our focus now to the international stage. The United Nations opponents are another group that's raising concerns about, you know, the potential erosion of American sovereignty.
Yeah, this group views U.S. involvement in the United Nations with a lot of skepticism. They're worried that it could ultimately compromise American independence and sovereignty. They see the U.N. as a potential stepping stone towards a system of global governance, which they view as a threat to, you know, the traditional nation-state system, and by extension to American liberty.
So they're basically saying, America first. And let's not get too entangled in these international organizations that might try to dictate policy or limit our freedom of action.
Yeah, that's a good summary of their perspective. They're wary of any entity that they believe could, you know, undermine the authority of the U.S. government and impose policies that are contrary to American interests or values.
They also bring up this concept of a new world order. It sounds a bit like something out of, you know, a conspiracy theory. Can you kind of break down what they're talking about?
Yeah, the term new world order is often used by conspiracy theorists to describe this, you know, supposed secret plan by a powerful elite to establish a single global totalitarian government. And the UN is often cited as, you know, a key institution in this alleged conspiracy, which they believe aims to undermine national sovereignty and individual liberty worldwide.
So it's like they see the UN as a potential tool for this shadowy cabal to exert control over the entire world.
Yeah, that's the basic idea. They believe that, you know, this new world order would, you know, erode national borders, dismantle traditional power structures, and ultimately lead to a loss of freedom and autonomy for individuals.
It's a perspective that definitely plays into those fears about globalization and the potential loss of national identity.
You're right. These concerns are often rooted in a deep attachment to American exceptionalism and a belief that, you know, the United States should maintain its, you know, unique role and identity on the world stage.
It's a perspective that's definitely worth exploring further. Even if you don't subscribe to, you know, the more extreme conspiracy theories, it raises important questions about, you know, the balance of power in a globalized world and the potential impact of international organizations on national sovereignty.
Absolutely. It highlights that tension, you know, between cooperation and independence that often plays out in international relations. And it reminds us that, you know, these are really complex issues with no easy answers.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about taxes, Social Security, the Federal Reserve gun rights, federal overreach, and even the United Nations. It seems like the Patriot Movement is concerned with pretty much every aspect of American life.
You're not wrong. And there's actually one more group to discuss, but we'll save that for the final part of our deep dive.
All right, stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back with more insights into the Patriot Movement. Okay, so we're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into this whole Patriot Movement thing. We've gone through a lot, from taxes and Social Security to gun rights and even the UN. But there's one more group we got to unpack.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, well, it kind of challenges a core principle of American democracy, I think.
You're talking about the church and state advocates, right? I mean, their whole perspective is kind of a pushback against that, you know, that traditional understanding of the separation of church and state,
right,
which, you know, a lot of people see as, you know, as a cornerstone of individual freedom and religious liberty.
Right. And it's like a paradox almost, isn't it? They're part of this movement that's all about, you know, protecting American liberty.
Yeah.
But then they're questioning this principle that, you know, so many people view as essential to safeguarding those very freedoms.
Yeah.
It's kind of a head scratcher.
Yeah, I know. It's what makes their perspective so interesting. It's not as simple as just like advocating for a theocracy or, you know, trying to force their beliefs on everyone else. It's more nuanced than that. They're arguing that this current interpretation, you know, of the separation of church and state has gone too far and has actually created this environment that's kind of hostile to religious expression, you know, out there in the public sphere.
So they're saying that religion has been like pushed out of public life more than the founding fathers ever intended.
That's their argument. Yeah. They don't think the founding fathers wanted religion to be totally gone from public life. You know, they point to all this historical evidence, like the fact that a lot of early American leaders were very religious and often talked about God in their speeches and writings.
And they say that the modern take on this separation of church and state actually contradicts some earlier Supreme Court rulings, too.
Right.
What's that about?
Well, they bring up cases where the Supreme Court, you know, acknowledged God's sovereignty and, you know, that historical importance of religion, you know, in American society. And they say these rulings, you know, they show that the founding fathers didn't want this, like, you know, super strict wall between church and state. More like a system where religion had a place in public life, but, you know, without stepping on individual liberties.
So it's not about, like, let's make America a Christian nation or something. It's more like, hey, let's remember, you know, faith's role in our history and culture.
Exactly. They're focused on what they see as this growing, you know, hostility towards religion,
yeah,
you know, out there in the world. And they might be against things like, you know, limits on religious expression in schools or government buildings, or
sure,
like taking down religious symbols from public places.
Right.
They see all that as trying to erase religion from American life.
It's complicated for sure. Lots of history and legal stuff to think about. It shows how diverse the Patriot Movement is, too.
Mm.
All these different groups, you know, want to protect American liberty,
yeah,
but they have totally different ideas on how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds us that even in movements that seem to have, you know, one clear ideology, there are all these different beliefs and ways of doing things. And it's important to, you know, understand all that, not just, you know, oversimplify everything.
So we've really dug into this Patriot Movement. We've looked at their worries about taxes, Social Security, the Fed gun rights, federal overreach, the UN, and this whole church and state thing. That's a lot.
It is. And what connects all these different things is this belief that American liberty is in danger. And they want to bring back what they see as, you know, those original principles of the country. They think all these institutions and policies and social trends are chipping away at the freedoms and values that make America, you know, what it is.
It's worth trying to understand their view, even if you don't agree with everything they say. It makes you think about our democracy and what values we really stand for as a nation.
Absolutely. Whether you agree with them or not, they're out there, and it shows that some people feel really disconnected from how things are right now, and they're looking for answers and solutions.
It's been really interesting, you know, exploring all these different parts of the Patriot movement. I hope everyone listening found it informative and, you know, got them thinking.
Me too. And, you know, keep thinking about these ideas and decide what you think about them. What makes sense to you? What makes you question what you thought you knew? The more we understand these different viewpoints, the better we can talk about things and, you know, shape the future of our country.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the Patriot movement. Thanks for joining us, everybody.